Support for GPR streaming comes from Port of Entry, a podcast from KPBS and PRX. Border people often inhabit this in-between space created by the separation and collision of two cultures. The Port of Entry podcast tells personal stories from this place, stories of love, hope, struggle, and survival from border crossers and other people whose lives are shaped by the wall. Find Port of Entry on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen. Details at portofentrypod.org.
This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. Since the November 3rd election, there's been a lot of talk about the Latino vote. Strangely, there's more talk now about the Latino vote than there was actually before the election, which is when it should have happened. The issue is many Latinos voted in a way that was counter to some political assumptions. We saw a Republican shift in some Latino voting patterns, and now there is a blame game going on, and then some are taking credit. But it seems like those old assumptions are still in play. They're just being spun to fit particular political narratives. So what is the Latino vote? Is there really such a thing, or is there just different types of ways that Latinos vote? Why is it shocking that Hispanic Americans would vote Republican? And what does this mean for the future of the two parties and for the nation? We want to hear from you. Call in. What did you see? What do you experience? Do you feel like there's a something going on here that you can help us understand? 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. You can also email us at thesource@tpr.org, tweet at us at @TPRSource, and you can text us at that number, 833-877-8255. We're joined by Geraldo Cadava, PhD, professor of history at Northwestern University, author of The Hispanic Republican, The Shaping of an American Political Identity from Nixon to Trump. And Geraldo Cadava, welcome to The Source.
Thank you so much for having me. It's great to be here.
I want to play a piece of tape for you right off the bat here, a little setup. This is an exchange between presidential candidate Donald Trump and Univision anchor Jorge Ramos. This is after Jorge Ramos got thrown out of the press conference really early in the campaign. Jorge Ramos didn't wait his turn to ask a question, and then he got thrown out of the press conference. He goes into the hallway. Some strange guy tells Jorge Ramos to get out of my country. Hope Hicks comes out here, asks Jorge to come back into the press conference, and he said he does, and then he finally gets called on, and this is what happens.
Go ahead.
I want to ask you about the Latino vote. You say that you're going to win the Latino vote.
I think so, because I'm going to bring jobs back.
But the truth is, I've seen the polls. The Univision polls say 75% of Latinos.
How much am I suing Univision for right now? No. Do you know the number?
Tell me.
Do you know the number? And you know you're a part of the lawsuit. How much am I suing Univision
for? But the question is, Mr. Trump.
Wait.
I'm a reporter, Mr.
500 million.
I'm a reporter.
Okay, and
the question
and
is,
they're very concerned about it, I have to tell you.
So you allow me to ask
I'm very
a
good at this stuff.
Go ahead. You're losing the Latino, 75% of Latinos.
I don't think I will.
Nationwide.
I haven't even started.
75% of Latinos have a negative opinion of you. Gallup.
Do you know how many Latinos?
The most popular candidate among them all. So, okay. And just checks social media.
Do you know how many Latinos work
many
for me?
Latinos
do you know how many Hispanics are working for
you, Mr. Trump?
Okay.
You know that.
They love me.
That
they love me.
See, the
do you know how many Hispanics work for me? Thousands.
No,
do you know how many have worked for me over the years? Tens of thousands.
75% have a negative opinion.
Here's what happens.
You won't win the White House.
Once I win, you're going to see things happen.
So, Geraldo, Jorge Ramos says Latino voters will not vote for him. Donald Trump says, yes, they will. Who was right?
First of all, thank you for playing that tape. I haven't heard it since since it came out. And man, it almost sounded like the first presidential debate, the way that Biden and Trump were shouting over one another. Who was right? Who was wrong? I mean, I think Trump's margin this time, I mean, not margin, but percentage, if exit polls are correct and to be believed, 32%, that's kind of within the historical range of between a quarter and a third of the Latino vote that the Republican candidate has won in every election since Richard Nixon's reelection in 1972. So, you know, it's not extraordinary, the result, but I think what is most surprising is that this president who, to all appearances and public statements and things like that, has done everything he could to alienate Latinos actually expanded his support. And again, if exit polls are to be believed, expanded his support from 28% of the Latino vote to 32% of the Latino vote. So, you know, I think he is a very unlikely second coming of someone like George W. Bush, who was thought to be the kind of expert at Latino outreach. But Trump, nevertheless, is the person who has expanded support among Latinos. So I think that's the surprising thing and deserves some explanation.
Right. You use the word a paradox in your book.
Yeah. The paradox being, it's been a while since I've picked up my book and looked at it, but that doesn't surprise me. But the paradox being that how could Latinos support both this candidate and the party that seems to stand so much against their interests? But I think that the important thing to keep in mind is that Latinos who support Republicans aren't voting against their own interests. What they're doing is just kind of articulating their own understanding of what their interests are. And, you know, Latino support for the Republican Party has been longstanding. It has been deep. And I think it's important to try to understand their political beliefs and political motives. I think that's one of the main reasons I wanted to write the book, to, you know, portray Latinos as serious political thinkers with ideas about politics, as paradoxical as that might seem.
It's only a paradox to anyone who doesn't really understand what's going on.
Yeah, I think that's right. I mean, I think there's, you know, in the intro to your show, you talked about these two narratives that develop about the Latino vote. And, you know, I think you were absolutely right in that intro that it's often for political advantage and advancing one particular political understanding over another. And just take this election as an example. I think a narrative is emerging that there are two narratives. One is that a record number of Latino voters showed up to help Joe Biden win in critical swing states like Arizona and Nevada and Pennsylvania and Michigan. And another narrative is that Latinos shifted toward Trump. And I think partisan actors are, you know, pointing to both of these things. One, I think it's mainly Democrats and liberals pointing out that a record number of Latino voters showed up to vote for Joe Biden. And it's mainly Republicans like Marco Rubio, who tweeted last week that, you know, what we saw in South Florida and South Texas is a glimpse of the Republican Party of the future, and that it's going to be a kind of non-white working class party. And both of those things are statements, I guess, are efforts to spin how Latinos voted. And I think it's important to keep both in mind at the same time and to try to explain both at the same time. So, only if you're buying in already to one of these narratives above the other would you be surprised by the result.
And Marco Rubio also said simultaneously that he thought the Republican Party should rebrand itself as a multiracial party, which is not about to happen.
It's not about to happen, you said?
Yeah.
Well, there would be a long way to go for that to happen, for sure. I mean, I think the Republican Party still has to reckon with the fact that they've only won one popular vote in the 21st century, and, you know, continuing to chug along at even between a quarter and a third, or maybe even 40% of the Latino vote. That's the level of support that George W. Bush won. I mean, even chugging along at that level of support will become less and less of a recipe for success as Latinos represent a greater share of the American population.
But the recipe for Republican success, gaining the popular vote, doesn't mean they have to get the majority of the Latino vote, but if they can get 40%, then they are still golden. And if that's possible, while still appealing to a shrinking white demographic that has a lot of racial resentment baked into their talking points and their red meat. We're going to talk about that when we come back from the break. Our number is 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. Is there really a Latino vote? Is that too broad of a term? Who are the Latino voters? This is The Source on Texas Public Radio when we come back. Welcome back to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about Hispanic Republicans, which is an emerging new reality in America's politics. If you have a question, call in. The number is 833-877-8255. You want to tell us your experiences, your political choices. If you're a Latino, why are you a Republican or a Democrat? 833-TPR-TALK. Some people have criticized the Biden campaign that it didn't really work hard enough to gain the Latino vote. Here's one way that they did.
I just have one thing to say. Hang on here.
All right. There you go. Dance a little bit, Joe. Come on.
Hey, yo. And that was former Vice President Joe Biden at the podium playing Despacito from his cell phone. Some people thought that was really not great. What do you make of that attempt to appeal to the Latino vote? Geraldo Caldava, professor of history, Northwestern University, author of The Hispanic Republican, The Shaping of an American Political Identity from Nixon to Trump, Despacito.
I like the song. I mean, I still cringe a little bit when I think about the context of the whole thing. I mean, I know that Luis Fonsi had just introduced him, but, you know, I think it just kind of struck many as characteristic of a long history of hispandering and kind of trying to reach out to Latinos just only by, you know, saying that you're down with or understand the cultural icons and, you know, songs and food and accents that are familiar to us. So, you know, I think it would have been nice to have more engagement in that particular moment. I mean, as he did go on to do by talking about particular issues like healthcare, jobs, education. So it was a kind of unfortunate beginning and performance, I think, for an otherwise substantive 8-minute speech by Joe Biden.
Let's go to the phone lines. 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK with Antonio. Antonio, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Thank you. First, I would just like to make a comment. I teach Latino spirituality, Latino culture as an adjunct professor at Incarnate Word, and I've also worked within the Catholic Church for many years here in San Antonio. And I would be interested how the Catholic Latino vote went compared to the evangelical Latino vote. My friends that voted for Trump, which were not that many, family friends, would say that the only issue that mattered to them was the supposedly anti-abortion or pro-life stance of the Republicans. Aside from that, they had no other issue why they would support President Trump. So I would like to know a little bit more about Catholic Latino vote versus evangelical Latino vote and generational, the first, second, or third generation. My experience was the third generation would be more tending to be more Republican, I mean, very small compared to the first, second generation.
All right, Antonio, thank you for the call. So, Geraldo?
Yeah, those are excellent questions. And, you know, I think it's fair to say that evangelical Latinos vote for Republicans at a higher rate than Catholic Latinos do, and they do tend to talk about abortion. But I think religion in general is one of the two main arguments that the Trump campaign made to Latinos ever since 2017. I mean, not just in the months before the election. And, you know, the first was the economy and the low rates of unemployment, rising rates of home ownership, tax cuts, deregulations, those things. But the other was religious freedom. And I think religious freedom and religious liberty goes beyond just the politics of abortion. I think it also has to do with the religious identity of charter schools and the general desire among Latino evangelicals and Latino Catholics, more Latino evangelicals, I think, to kind of blur the line between faith and public life. And I think that was something that really resonated with them. I mean, I think, you know, so I think that that was a big issue. The question about, and I should say that is an issue that many Hispanic Republicans in Texas in particular that I talked to brought up, including like Ray Baca in El Paso. He's the head of the Border Hispanics for Trump group, and he had a large outreach organization. At least it was pretty significant until COVID shut it down when he was less able to go out and do things. But a lot of it according to him, had to do with abortion and religion. And he talked a lot about how Ted Cruz's father, a pastor himself, was going around the state talking to Hispanic religious communities. And then I think the question of generation is interesting. I mean, I think that is what the caller was talking about is one of the ideas that the third generation and those who've lived in the United States for a long time and are therefore less connected to the immigrant experience, and they might be more likely to vote for Donald Trump. And I think that there's some truth to that. But I also remember a conversation I had with the chairman of the Republican Party of El Paso, and he told me that he personally would show up at all of the naturalization ceremonies in El Paso and hand out literature about what the values of the Republican Party were to immigrants who were still in the process of naturalizing and had just become citizens. And so that was really telling to me that Republicans haven't given up on trying to recruit immigrants into the Republican Party by, you know, kind of right out the gates telling right. them what the Republican Party stood for.
So, but the pro-life Latinos, Republicans, were that even before Trump came around. I mean, this doesn't account for a shift. So what we're looking for is for people who were typically Democratic voters and who now decided, well, maybe I feel more comfortable voting for Donald Trump. And then there are some people who point to, like, Ted Cruz, senator in Texas, and then I've heard Latino Democrats say Ted Cruz is as Mexican as Tom Cruise.
That's great. I think Marco Rubio said something like that in one of the debates too. When not exactly, but he was making fun of.
Then he's really a Cuban Canadian. So, so there's a lot of questions about, you know, what is accounting for this shift. Let's go to Lola on the phones. Lola, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Yes. Yes, I'm Tejana, Comezo Chicana. I think Latinos across the country are not monoliths. But from what I heard in communities of Mexicanos, Latinos, is they're one issue voters. For some, more traditional, it was the abortion stance, so they went with Trump. Older Cubans, you label somebody a socialist, that's it. They're not going to vote for you. And most older Cuban immigrants are, you know, socialism means Fidel Castro as far as they're concerned. So they weren't going to go with that label if it was tacked onto you. Also, I think brown people, Chicanos and Tejanos, it was more important because the issue of seeing children in cages in South Texas was very important. It did shock me that the Valley went strongly Trump, but I know that a lot of people that I talked to in the barrio said that was it. They just couldn't believe that. And the Dreamers issue. So that's what I wanted to say.
Lola, thank you so much. There's a lot there. So, Gerardo Cardava?
Yeah, there's really a lot there. I mean, I do think that, you know, what voter behavior is and what voters do when they get into a ballot box and how they prioritize one issue over another when they actually make a decision is a really interesting question. And, you know, I don't know that I fully know the answer to that, but I do know that, you know, Latinos have regularly, I think Latinos care about a lot of things, you know, on the question of whether they're single issue voters or not. You know, maybe there is an issue that tips the scale for them and causes them to vote one way or another. But, you know, I think Latinos regularly report caring about a whole bunch of things at the same time, education, jobs, the economy. I mean, I think it's notable that they often list those kinds of issues above immigration. So, you know, I think Latinos care about a lot of things. Maybe different groups of Latinos in different parts of the country, depending on their citizenship or class background or whether they're a man or a woman or whether they consider themselves to be indigenous or of African descent or even white, as the census calls us. You know, I think maybe those things also shape how you see politics. I think the caller is absolutely right that Latinos are not a monolith, and I also don't believe that there's any such thing as the Latino vote. I would rather say that there are millions and millions of Latino voters, and we need to kind of understand their voting behavior as a multitude rather than as a group. But That's my belief. And, you know, I think that pointing out our national group diversity and that there are Mexican Americans and Cuban Americans and Venezuelans, I mean, that's, I really think, just the most basic thing you could say about the ways in which we're not a monolith. And I think all of those other things I was alluding to, like urban-rural divides, class backgrounds, men, women, citizenship status versus long
time. Yeah, so, but let's focus a little bit on the Texas-Mexico border for a second, you know, mm-hmm. where we saw a lot of this red shift happening with Latino voters in places like Zapata County and Starr County. And these are places, they're not in the Rio Grande Valley, as much as the mainstream media wants to tell you that they're not. They're, you know, they're in South Texas. Rio Grande Valley is to the east of that. But they're on the border. And but these are places that are heavily impacted by the petroleum industry and the loss of jobs. These are job voters.
Yeah, no, that's right. And, you know, I think, you know, I've heard that same kind of analysis, and they point to statements by Joe Biden about ending our reliance on fossil fuels as something that hurt him in Texas, much like the fracking issue hurt him in Pennsylvania, and so, or at least, you know, turned some voters away from him. So yeah, I think that's a reality. I think, you know, part of what's going on in South Texas generally is also just a long-standing inattention, I think, to the region. I mean, it's a region that is often noted for health disparities and higher rates of poverty than elsewhere, and a place that has so reliably gone Democrats that most politicians don't even go campaign there. And, you know, I think some people read Kamala Harris's visit to South Texas as a sign of strength for the Biden campaign because, you know, it showed how they were really making an effort to turn the state blue, but it could also, I think, be read as a sign of weakness that they were very uncertain about how voters in South Texas were going to go. So, you know, I remember talking to a candidate for Congress named Monica de la Cruz Hernandez, who was running in the Rio Grande Valley, and, you know, she was talking about her district, Edinburgh, you know, being the ground zero for the migrant detention and family separation tragedy that we saw. And, you know, her version of the story was that the media got that really wrong and that Border Patrol officers were actually protecting children because they were being brought by adults who weren't their parents, and that many migrant children were being brought for sex work. And so the Border Patrol officers were actually protecting the children. So I'm not...
Right,
I'm
yeah. So not, if you live in Edinburgh and these other communities, I mean, the Border Patrol officers... They're the guys, they're the scout leaders, they're the coaches for the little league football teams and the baseball teams. They're very active in the community, and they're doing well. So, and then you also, if you're in the border area, you don't, if you actually live in the border, you kind of like border security because sometimes you have been, you know, a victim of petty crime that may have happened.
Yeah. And I'm from Tucson, Arizona, you know, and I think the border region in southern Arizona about 10 years ago, 15 years ago, was thought of as, you know, ground zero. And I think, you know, whatever ground zero is, it changes over time as immigration patterns shift themselves. And so, you know, my point is that being from southern Arizona, there is, I think, the immigration and border debate is polarizing in regions that are actually the epicenters of immigration activity, you know, and it was really deeply divisive in southern Arizona when the Border Patrol built its new multi-million-dollar facility there, and some people liked it because they felt like they were a stabilizing influence in the community that was protecting them, and others were really upset because it was a symbol of violence and discrimination and separation between these two countries who've been neighbors for...
But in Arizona, their experiences are very different to what we're having here in Texas and California and New Mexico. It's all... And that's why, I mean, to say the Latino vote, I mean, it should be talking about, you know, if the difference was the maker for Texas flipping blue or not was the Mexican-American vote, particularly on the border, you know, stop painting with a broad brush and start looking at what's really going on the ground here. The number is 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. We're talking about Hispanic Republicans, Latino vote diversity, voting for what works for you, and the calculus that's involved in making these decisions. Again, the number is 833-877-8255. We'll be right back.
Support for TPR Podcast comes from Port of Entry, a podcast filled with cross-border stories from cross-border people like you. Port of Entry zooms in on some of the interesting and unexpected ways the U.S. and Mexico are inextricably linked, despite the wall running between us. From KPBS and PRX, Port of Entry is available now on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen. Get details at portofentrypod.org.
Welcome back to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about Hispanic Republicans and Latino voting diversity. Our number is 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. With us is Geraldo Cadava. He's author of The Hispanic Republican, The Shaping of an American Political Identity from Nixon to Trump. And he's also a professor of history at Northwestern University. But joining us now is Jason Villalba. He's a former Republican state representative and president of the Texas Hispanic Policy Foundation. Jason Villalba, welcome to The Source.
Well, thank you for having me. Wonderful to be on today.
Also with us, Mark P. Jones, political science fellow at Rice University's Baker Institute for Public Policy and director of research and analytics for the Texas Hispanic Policy Foundation. So, Jason, President Trump, he lost re-election, but he did better than people thought he did, mainly because of the involvement of Hispanic Republicans. What do you think about that?
Well, I think it's a bit premature to make that statement about the rest of the country. And in Texas and Dade County in Florida, I think there's certainly some indications of that. But even in Texas—
let me make sure I got that correct. So President Trump has not lost re-election?
Oh, I'm sorry. Yes, he certainly lost re-election.
Okay.
But I thought you were referring to whether or not it was because of Hispanic support. I must have misheard the question.
Okay. But he did gain a shift in support. I mean, at least in Texas, which is the big kahuna, we're the big kielbasa for political electoral votes for Republicans.
Oh, right. You know, if you look at the border region and if you look at the RGV particularly, he unquestionably did better than Hillary Clinton did in 2016. But if you look at the major urban centers around Texas, Houston and Dallas, El Paso, Austin, Joe Biden did almost as well as Hillary Clinton did. And I think it's important to look at Texas as a regionally rather than just a singular monolith of votes, of Hispanic votes.
Mark P. Jones at Rice University's Baker Institute, as you looked at the research and analyzing polling data, what do you make of the Hispanic vote in Texas?
Well, back in August, the Texas Hispanic Policy Foundation carried out an oversample that has an extra large number of Hispanics that we surveyed to understand how this diverse electorate behaved. And what we found was that it wasn't sort of, you couldn't really say Hispanic or non-Hispanic. It really mattered to look within the Hispanic community, where they lived. Was it the RGV or up in the Metroplex or in Houston? Were they evangelical Christians or were they Catholics? Were they college educated or not college educated? Did they speak English at home or primarily speak Spanish? All of those factors influence on the likelihood they would have voted for Joe Biden or Donald Trump. And so I think it's really important to not look at the Hispanic population as a monolithic group, but rather look at it from all of its diverse segments, just like we do with the Anglo population.
Let's go to the callers. We have a bunch of calls on the board here, 833-877-8255. And Luis is on the board. Luis, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hello, I'm Luis from San Antonio. My mother voted last time for Hillary Clinton, and this time she voted for Donald Trump, the Republicans. And after I talked to her, I find out that when I saw Facebook was not fact-checked, and all the information she got usually is from Facebook. In English, they will sometimes have the label saying this information is false. In Spanish, there was virtually none. The other one, I blame it on that shift that she had is on religion. She say, I don't want to be killing babies, and I think that's a misinformation. I think we Democrats are more pro-life than Republicans, but that's another story. And the third reason I give it to is Donald Trump has a rock star, you know, personality, and you know, I think also that brand will get people to vote for him, and I think that was the reason my mother also voted for Donald Trump this time.
All right, Luis, thank you for the call. We appreciate that. So, Jason Villalba, if you wanted to respond to that.
Yeah, I think Luis really hits upon something that is being under-characterized in the media, and that is that there is this appeal, this rock star appeal that Donald Trump has. If you look at the trains and the boat, the boat events that they had, it was all driven organically by people who just found the celebrity of Donald Trump very interesting, and so they put together these Trump trains and these boat events. And so I think that's a big part of the appeal of his voting for him. And I think you saw that in the Hispanic community, and you saw it around the country, really, in different places. But it definitely had an impact, I believe, in the Hispanic community in Texas.
I'm going to play a clip here. This is Eva Longoria talking about election night.
The women of color showed up in big ways. Of course, you saw in Georgia what black women have done, but Latina women were the real heroines here, beating men in turnout in every state and voting for Biden-Harris at an average rate close to 3-1. And that wasn't surprising to us. You know, Latinos are the CEOs of the households. They make all the financial decisions and healthcare decisions and educational decisions. Many Latinas are small business owners, and they wanted a plan for recovery for themselves, not for Wall Street. And so Trump's policies were never aimed at the struggling Latina community.
Now, Eva Longoria had to walk that back because it seemed like she was downplaying the involvement of African-American women. So Geraldo Cadava, author of The Hispanic Republican, what about looking at this through a gender lens?
Yeah, I think that's real also. I mean, I would note very quickly that the figure that Eva Longoria mentioned, 3-1 support, that even that would still, you know, whether it's 2-1, 3-1 for men or for women, I think, you know, 2-1 or 3-1 support still falls within that, you know, normal 25-33% range for Latinas and Latinos. So it might for women, it might have been on the lower end, but, you know, still falls within that range. So that's interesting. But I also do believe that there was a gender gap and a growing gender gap, in fact. I mean, in 2016, I think we saw the same thing where 2/3 of Donald Trump's support among Latinos came from men and 1/3 came from women. And the exact opposite was true for Hillary Clinton, that 2/3 of her support came from Latinas, 2/3 of her Latino support came from Latinas, and 1/3 came from men. And I think, so the question is, why? What's going on? And I guess I would point, instead of, or at least in addition to this idea that Latino men are drawn to the kind of Latin American strong man, which always to me feels a little bit like cultural essentialism and, you know, saying that Latinos are naturally one way or the other because of their, you know, affinity for a type of character, I would instead point to things like, you know, the overrepresentation of Latino males in the Border Patrol and the military and police forces. And those are, you know, professions and construction industries, too. Those are professions that are kind of overrepresented by males and tend to skew conservative.
Well, we mentioned earlier Biden's weak attempt at dancing to Despacito. We might want to mention Donald Trump's weak attempt at dancing to Macho Man, and if that's if that means something. Mark P. Jones, what about the gender divide here?
Well, I think, you know, what we saw in Texas was the gender divide again, but when Donald Trump was still winning in the high 30s among Latinas and in the mid 40s among men, that once again is what we see across the all ethnicities and races. There was a strong gender gap among Anglos, there was a strong gender gap among Latinos, and there was a strong gender gap among African Americans. Just Donald Trump performed substantially better with men than with women. That has been the case with the Republican Party, but that gender gap was exacerbated during Trump's tenure in office.
Let's go to another caller. Julie's on the phone. And Julie, thanks for calling in. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Thank you for taking my call. I'm calling as a retired teacher. I taught in Houston for a number of years as a bilingual teacher and a lifelong Democrat. I do not understand how anybody could vote for Republicans for family concerns, family services, children, education, health care. But, you know, a lot of my former students are dreamers now. And the way that Trump has just basically yo-yoed them around and not supported any children's legislation or care, I just don't get it. Okay. I'd like to hear some comment on that.
All right, Julie, thank you for that. So, Jason Villalba, I'm sure you could help with that.
Well, it's a great question and one that we hear a lot. I had a really interesting conversation last week with somebody who I asked that very question of. I mean, this was a person that has historically been independent, but has a number of relatives and friends who are either first generation or newly immigrated into the country. And I asked him about the strong support for Donald Trump. And he says, you know, where these people are coming from, particularly in Texas from across the border, their history and their experience is one that is not to be something that they would want to see again. When they come to this country, there's a tremendous love of this country, and they perceive that there's great opportunity, and they don't understand why people are against this president, who they perceive as being, you know, a big generator of these jobs and this economy and these opportunities and this freedom that they don't have back in their former locations in the old country, right? And so I think he said that that was a big part of why you saw that. And I thought it was interesting, and I hadn't heard that before, and it definitely resonated when you talk to some people about how they perceive that this is a great country and they want to vote for the status quo.
All right, we're taking a break. When we come back, we'll talk more about issues that seem to resonate with voters who are Latino and why they make a decision. If this is a one-off, is this a trend? What does this mean for the future of the United States? Because they were talking about the largest minority, largest demographic in America. 833-877-8255. We'll be right back. On Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies, talking about Hispanic Republicans and Latino voting diversity. Geraldo Cadava wrote the book, The Hispanic Republican, The Shaping of an American Political Identity from Nixon to Trump. Now, Geraldo, I have a quote from your book here. You write about a memo, 1975, asking about whether or not Hispanics were pawns in the Republican Party at that time. And this is your quote: If they had gotten their hands on one particular confidential memorandum, they would have concluded that they were pawns. According to the memo, Mexican Americans in California and Texas are different from one another and jealous, and they can be played against one another. And the memo said, but better still, they can be played off against, quote, the Negroes to break the monolithic low-class man that goes Democrat. So is there a classic issue here with, so we know Joe Biden was supported heavily with African-American voters. Does that play into eroding support with Latinos?
Yeah, that's interesting. I mean, I don't know that I would put it exactly like you put it. That memo, by the way, was from one of Gerald Ford's campaign aides. And, you know, I think it was reflective of a kind of historical strategy by the Republican Party to kind of divide and conquer Latino and African Americans. And one of the arguments that the Republican Party made to Latinos about why they should join the Republican Party is that the Democratic Party was the party that cared about African Americans, but they didn't care about Latinos. And the other thing was that Republicans were going to help Latinos advance through several economic uplift, economic development programs, whereas all the Democratic Party wanted to do was give handouts away to African Americans. So it was this kind of racially coded language. And so, you know, what that says about, I don't know that it says much about overall the kind of trajectories of the Democratic and Republican Party. I see it more as about different campaigns having different approaches. You know, I think some campaigns do Latino outreach better and offer more inclusive visions for the party than other candidates. And so I think it remains to be seen what that's going to look like going forward.
But the Democratic Party in their televised national virtual convention, not a lot of FaceTime was given to Latino candidates. Julian Castro didn't give us not given a speaking role. It certainly didn't seem like they were appealing to Latino voters at that time. Jason Villalba, a former state representative, president of the Texas Hispanic Policy Foundation, have you looked at what the Democrats are doing and you scratch your head and wonder why aren't they making a more overt play for Latino voters?
Well, I think historically Democrats have believed that the conventional wisdom is that that Hispanics are going to be Democrats, right? And they look at the numbers historically, and those numbers have been accurate. They've been generally in line with what the African-American community sees. We're people of color. We're people who have been diminished in general society. And so, therefore, we should naturally find a home in the Democratic Party. And so I think largely we're taken for granted. I think what's happened in the last 20, 30 years is you're seeing, you know, a play being made for the hearts and minds of Latinos from all parties, and they're using the same arguments they would use on any voter, Latino, African-American, or particularly the Anglo vote. You know, what works for the kitchen table issues like education and economic opportunity? Those are the two, I think, that resonate most with Latinos, at least in Texas. If you look at, you know, what issues drive Latinos to the polls, it's largely going to be educational opportunities for our kids so that their kids have a better life than we do, and economic opportunities. We have jobs. You know, I think that really has resonated well with Latinos, and that's the reason why in Texas you see, you know, consistently a higher number of Latinos are voting for Republicans than they might say in, say, California or New Jersey, right? And so I think that's been an effective way to reach them.
All right. So, Jason Villalba, I'm told that I have to let you go. I'm out of time with you, but I want to thank you for helping us crack this nut. I appreciate it. Former state representative, president of the Texas Hispanic Policy Foundation. And then I think I have time for one more question with Mark P. Jones with the Rice University's Baker Institute for Public Policy. I mean, what do you see as the main issues? We just heard from Jason about education and jobs. Is that what you see?
Well, I think what Jason mentions for Hispanics is the same issues as apply to everybody. And I think one of the errors that Democrats made during this past cycle is that you have a coastal Democratic elite, it's also a Latino political elite that tends to view the world through a very liberal lens and assumes that because they have a certain set of attitudes and beliefs, that all Latinos will share those attitudes, and that's just a matter of demographic destiny, that they'll vote Democratic and Democrats will take over. And what I think this election showed is a wake-up call for all parties, that Latino voters actually are a diverse group that also vote based on a variety of issues, not just in common cause with the Democratic Party. And so in many ways, Latino voters do not behave like African-American voters in terms of how they vote, in being sort of wedded to the Democratic Party, are more likely to vote for the Democratic Party than the Republican Party.
So that Latino voters in maybe on the border in South Texas don't really see the Republican Party as openly hostile to them.
Right. I mean, think about those border areas. When you're down in the Valley is 90% Latino. They're, you know, in terms of, it doesn't have the same issues that, say, in other electorates. There isn't the view that Latinos are discriminated against, at least in the area, because everyone is a Latino. And you also have a whole host of people working in Border Patrol and all law enforcement. And so any policies nationally that Democrats have that are seen as anti-law enforcement, such as defunding the police, resonate negatively because it's difficult to find someone in the Valley who doesn't have a relative or friend working in some level of law enforcement.
All right, Mark P. Jones, political science fellow, Rice University's Baker Institute for Public Policy. Thank you so much for joining us. Let me go to another caller, Jorge. And Jorge, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Oh, thank you for taking my call. I'm calling from San Antonio, Texas. I just want to comment on the votes about why people came out and meet groups and voted in favor of either Donald Trump or Biden. And I just want to comment that personally, I voted for Biden, not so much because I like Biden, but I voted for Biden because I didn't like Trump. So there were thousands of people like me that went and voted for Biden, Mexican or Mexican-American, voted for Biden, not so much because they like Biden, but they didn't like Trump.
All right. Jorge, thank you so much for the call. Gerardo Cadalva, you're a history professor. And I look at the what's happening with Republican right now, Republican Party right now, and I think about Tammany Hall. So Tammany Hall started out in New York City as a nativist fraternity organization, anti-immigrants, and then it became pro-Irish immigrants. And is that the future of the Republican Party? They're going to have to wrap their arms around somehow the Latino vote and become the defender of Latinos in the United States in order to remain viable.
So I think it's so interesting that so much of what we've been talking about in the past hour is really about the future and what the result this year portends for the future. And the honest truth, so far as I can tell, is that we just don't know yet, and it's going to take some time. I think there's going to be jockeying on both sides to say either that Latinos showed up in record numbers to help the Democrat win in key swing states. And after all, Joe Biden won Arizona as a Democrat for the first time in 20-some years, even in Texas, even though Joe Biden lost. Hillary Clinton lost by 9 points in 2016. This year it was 6 points. So, you know, does that suggest a shift toward the Democratic Party in the long run? But Republicans, I can tell you for a fact that I have been talking with several Latino Republicans over the past few days about how they feel momentum and how they feel energized, and this is a moment that they're going to seize upon and try to organize over the next 4 years to make sure that the 2024 nominee duplicates Donald Trump's relative success among Latinos. So I think that's going to be the turf war over the next few years, and we don't really know. I mean, something else that came up during this conversation is if it was just Donald Trump's rock star personality. So I think that begs the question, is the shift toward Donald Trump unique? Is it going to begin and end with him, you know? And I don't think we know until we know who the 2024 candidate will be, and until we know how Latino Republicans are going to try to capitalize on the momentum they had this year. The last thing I'll say is that I think it's important to keep in mind that the shift was noticeable. And it was across the map, not just in South Florida and South Texas, but it was still slight. I mean, it was 28% to 32%. Is, I think, kind of creeping up at that rate isn't going to lead to immediate
dividends. But isn't it better to be fought over if both parties are going to be trying to win you as a demographic? Then maybe you will actually get something out of this. Better schools, better opportunities, better services.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think Latino Republicans have said that for a long time. I mean, since the 1950s, again, one of their main recruiting tactics was to say that it's better to have candidates fighting over us because our interests will be more fully represented. And so I think that if anything good comes out of this election, it will be a kind of commitment by both parties to take Latino issues seriously and to really get to know Latino voters in our greatest diversity from like tomorrow or yesterday.
But as a highly pragmatic voter.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. Instead of one that's kind of already in the bag for one party or the other.
Geraldo Cadalva is a PhD professor of history at Northwestern University, author of The Hispanic Republican, The Shaping of an American Political Identity from Nixon to Trump. I could have talked to you for a couple more hours. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. Thanks for tuning us in.
This has been The Source on Texas Public Radio. The Source is hosted by David Martin Davies, produced by Kim Johnson and Dallas Williams, with production assistance provided by Ruben Garcia and Kathleen Creedon. Dan Katz is TPR's news director. Support for The Source comes from contributors to the Community Engagement Fund, including the Gladys and Ralph Lazarus Foundation.